right, starting from very beginning, there were prehistoric settlements in the vicinity of Doncaster, long before Romans came. The River Don could be crossed here and not for several miles elsewhere. The inhabitants of this area depended upon arable and pastoral farming, and also hunting for the livelihood. The very nature of the extensive territory led to a lot of tribal divisions. So there were obviously warring and fighting going on. There were also an iron site at Sutton Common and a fortified site at South Kirby. There was also a burial ground found at Edlington Wood. I don't know what particular age this was from, presumably from the prehistoric times. Then we go on to Roman times, where they were a fort at Templeborough Steelworks of steel pigeon tortoises. And there was also a Roman fort at the site of St. George's Church, which we know about, don't we? And a fortified settlement at Rossington Bridge near Doncaster. And there were civil settlements at the Marketplace, Baxter Gate and Arndale Centre. Of course, it weren't known as that at that time. But this were during Roman times when they came. At Adwickley Street, a site was found where there were several human burials, and one of the bodies had been mutilated prior to death by having his hands and feet amputated and then buried alive. Poor thing. This may have represented punishment to a servant. Well, they were pretty hard on the servants in them days, weren't they? An altar to the Mother Goddess was found in St. Sepulchre Gate with the inscription Marcus Nantonius Obio Talis freely and deservedly has fulfilled his vow. This was found on the site of the Elephant Inn in 1781 and may imply the site of a temple. But obviously it dated back to Roman times when they were here, because it was a Roman person. There were also extensive pottery industries around Doncaster, which is new to us, really, weren't it? But he's obviously found a lot of places where there were intensive amounts of pottery. Yeah, well, that'll be it. In AD 54, there was a direct clash with Rome and the Brigands, which obviously were somewhere in area, which was fueled by Cortimandua's abandonment of her consort, Venusius, for the favours of his armour bearer, Velocatus. That's a mouthful, isn't it? The tribe called the Brigands was involved with the fighting against Rome, and Nero had to send extra soldiers to subdue the rebels. So it must have been pretty fierce, wouldn't it? For 1,000 years, England was the battlefield for invaders. Romans were in Britain for about 350 years and Doncaster came into a more prominent existence with the Romans. The Romans built the fort at Doncaster that we've been talking about in 71 AD and they called it Danum. St. George's Church was later built on this site in the 4th... built on this site, not separate... In the 1st century, Roman civilization was in decline, and the last Roman soldiers left Britain in 407 AD. After the Romans had left, the Saxons came, and invited by the Britons to help them fight against the Picts and the Scots. There's always been a bother, haven't they, these Picts and Scots. The Saxons then conquered the Britons and made them slaves and serfs. So we did ourselves a real favour, or Britons did themselves a real favour. Yeah. The men who really made England were the Germans, known as the Angles and the Saxons. And, the Saxons divided Britain into seven parts with a king over each part and created a new united England for about 600 years. So they brought some a bit of order, which is, I suppose, what Germans are known for, isn't it? Doncaster was part of the northern kingdom of Northumbria under the first king, who was called Edwin. Named after you.
One of your relatives.
Yeah, tell you who it is. King Edwin. Listen, listen, listen. King Edwin was a Christian and was the first king to have built a Christian church at Doncaster, which was believed to have been built near the Corn Exchange. The Saxons called a fort a saester or caester or whatever. It's a funny thing to pronounce. When they arrived in South Yorkshire, they called this one Doncaster or Caister, whatever it is. In time, the name changed to Doncaster, and they created a village nearby. In around AD 633, there was a battle at Hatfield, known as the Battle of Hatfield, between King Edwin of Northumbria, King Penda of Mercia, with King Cadwallon of North Wales. This was the last great attempt to stem Christian truth by the pagans. We talked about pagans last week, didn't we? King Edwin was killed, along with his two sons, and the battle was lost. This lost battle was a serious setback to Christianity. Doncaster itself was sacked by the pagans, and many of the inhabitants were killed. Nobody has had a sufficient interest to discover this actual battle site, although it was the scene of one of the fiercest battles in English history. It's amazing, that, isn't it? Because wherever you go in the country, you get all these battle sites, and they're well documented. So,
Was that another big battle, that you were on about, Pilgrim of Grace?
Yeah, well, we shall get to that.
Oh, right.
We shall get to that.
Just another big battle, though,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was one of the first major battles around Doncaster. Well, I said first, I mean, they were brigands, weren't they? they were at it earlier. Yeah. So there's been a lot of fighting around this area. A lot of killing going on. Aye. Conisbrough was one of the major importance in the early Middle Ages, where there were Saxon portions of the church in the 8th century. The place name suggests that Conisbrough was the key point in a line stretching from Doncaster westward along the banks of the Don and Dern, although Doncaster was not a Saxon main town. You know, you thought it would have been, wouldn't you? Because it's bigger than them sort of places, isn't it? After the Saxons came the Normans, that's French, who invaded the Britons and took complete possession of and subjugated the land and its people. Doncaster suffered at the hands of the Normans, yet there are very few Norman remains here. There was a cross which stood at the south entrance of the town where four roads meet at the top of Hall Gate. This was commonly known as Hall Cross. It was taken down in 1792 for road lowering and lost. It had an inscription which, when translated, said this: This is the cross of Ot de Tille, to whose soul God show mercy. Otto de Tille was seneschal of Conisbrough under the Earl's Warren. That's approximate date was 1180 to 1200 AD. In the 12th century, Doncaster became a busy town, and in 1194, King Richard I gave Doncaster a charter. That's a document confirming certain rights to what they could do and what was theirs. It is wondered whether any town in England has ever been destroyed as often as Doncaster. So it's been a real place of destruction, hasn't it? Yeah. In 1204, at the time of King Richard the Lionheart, Doncaster was destroyed by a great fire. There existed friaries of Franciscans, or Grey Friars, who arrived in 1307, and Carmelite monks, or White Friars, who arrived mid-14th century. Doncaster remains one of the oldest boroughs. The street name Gate is derived from the old Danish word gata, which means street. In medieval towns, craftsmen of one type tended to live on the same street. So, you've got all the electricians on one seat. Old plumbers on another.
How about that word, Grey Friars, and Basques, going back from that, when the names after them then, would be Grey Friars. They used to be Grey Friars, swimming baths.
Oh, yeah.
That's up at
Doncaster.
Up towards Dunbridge, Market area.
Now. Oh, yeah. All right.
Not there now, it's not there now.
Well, Baxter is an old word for baker. So Baxtergate was the Baker Street. Frenchgate may have been named after the French-speaking Normans who settled here. Doncaster was drawn into the struggle between the House of York and Lancaster for the ownership of the crown in 1321. Thomas, Earl of Lancaster and owner of the fortress of Pontefract, called a meeting of the friendly barons at Doncaster. Edward II forbade the gathering, so Lancaster rose in rebellion. Then Edward II came to Doncaster, and the armies met at Boro Bridge. Lancaster lost the battle and was executed at Pontefract. There was an attempt to restore the House of Lancaster, but the Battle of Stamford ended the revolt. Edward came to Doncaster and ordered the beheading of Sir Robert Wells and Sir Ralph Grey. Wells was buried at the Carmelite Friary, and Grey at the Grey Friars Friary. Their heads were impaled on top of the old town's gate. That's something we talked about, isn't it? Henry IV, that's Henry Bolingbroke, who founded the royal line of Lancaster, was in Doncaster the very year he won the throne. He had previously been banished overseas, but in 1399 he marched across the East Riding and went to Pickering Castle. He then seized the castle at Knaresborough. At Pontefract, which was a Lancastrian stronghold, his force was enlarged, and at Doncaster his force became 30,000 men. He lodged in the house of the Carmelite friars. Henry IV had made an oath not to kill kill Richard II. When Richard was sent to Pontefract, he broke his oath, and Richard was killed by Pawlax, avenging the Earl of Lancaster. During the War of the Roses, Doncaster must have housed royal armies marching north and south. In 1470, the House of York had secured the throne. So they were at it a fair amount of years, weren't they? Doncaster came into prominence at the time of the Pilgrimage of Grace, which sprang out of the Reformation. This is something Geraldine and John were on about last week. Robert Ask, who was the leader, reopened the friaries that Henry VIII had closed and restored the monks to their places. They took York Hall and Scarborough Castle and held out for a while. King Henry took measures, and the Earl of Shrewsbury collected a royalist army at Sheffield. The rebels took Pontefract Castle, where the Archbishop of York happened to be staying. They received a herald from the king's army, but declined to surrender. The pilgrims were armed and set off from Pontefract to Doncaster. In October 1536, a second royalist army, under the command of the Duke of Norfolk, joined the Earl of Shrewsbury at Scoresby with 5,000 men. The rebels and the royalists were within 2 miles of each other, with the River Don between them. The royalists announced the terms on which surrender would be accepted. There are two versions that followed. One, the rebels wanted to fight, but the river suddenly rose and they were prevented from crossing. And two, they were not inclined to fight. So I don't know which were which. However, the rebels sent Sir Ralph Ellicker and Sir Robert Bowes with the Duke of Norfolk to London to see the king. The king promised a general pardon, except to the leaders. This was rejected. The rebel leaders then went into Doncaster to meet with the Duke of Norfolk. But the conference broke down. The rebels decided to attack Doncaster, but the Don rose in flood and prevented it. That must be what they might have been getting confused with. The Duke of Norfolk opened fresh negotiations and this time offered the general pardon with a promise of a parliament to be held at York to smooth out the hardest features of the religious suppression to the religious houses. The rebels accepted it and the Pilgrimage of Grace came to an end. Later, the king, who had no intention of keeping the agreement, had Ask and the other leaders executed. Right, traitor, weren't they? Right, bad one. The abbeys and the monasteries were closed the following year under some of the harshest measures which were to follow. In 1545, Doncaster gained a grammar school and a guildhall. That weren't bad for 1545, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. From the nave of and the Guildhall, they were converted from the nave of St. Mary Magdalene's Chapel. That was an old chapel that used to be there, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. I think that was probably a Norman chapel. The 16th and 17th centuries marked a significant time of plague outbreaks at Doncaster. During the time of its growth as a small market town, and the plagues were in 1562, 1582, 1583, 1604 and 1606. So they had a right belly full of that one, didn't they? Each time the plague struck, a significant part of the population perished. In 1615, the Corporation of Doncaster sent a bill to be exhibited in the Star Chamber Court at London to find out who had spread the libels which had led to the distrust of the old government of the town. No, it's changed, has it? In 1617, they published an order for the government of the town to suits and troubles, as follows: burgesses to go to church every Sunday. If just cause was not given for their absence, a 1 shilling fine was imposed. 4 pence fine to be imposed on every householder, his wife and family, if they didn't go on weekdays to church as often as there was a sermon. Aldermen were to wear scarlet gowns, the rest to wear comely gowns. And a fine was to be imposed for not attending civil meetings. And people were not to interrupt one another during the meetings. For years, Doncaster was one of the few who paid the mayor a salary to enable him to entertain up all the dignity of the town. Well, I think he takes his own money now, doesn't he, by all accounts? The Washington family lived at Adwick for 200 years, and the leaders of the Pilgrim Fathers, who sailed to America in September 1620, lived just outside Doncaster at Scrooby. King James once visited Doncaster. In 1642, King Charles came to Doncaster and had the Earl of Stratford, who had associations with Doncaster, beheaded. He was a Wentworth, by the way, the Earl of Stratford. The little church at Oulton Roberts is believed to be his burial place. In 1641, the army raised to fight the Scots was disbanded at Doncaster. And in 1644, Doncaster Cross was defaced by the Earl of Manchester's men coming out of the south to the siege of York. It was later beautified by William Paterson, the mayor of Doncaster, in 1678. And it is in 1683 where we come to the dissent and nonconformity in the days of Charles II. Doncaster Corporation, alarmed at the growth of separatism, presented an address to the king which declared that the town did not contain one dissenter from the government in church and state. The following year they declared, "We have not one factious or seditious person amongst us, being all true sons of the Church of England and loyal subjects to your most sacred majesty." We're trying to get on his good books, weren't we? No more beheadings, and you'd had enough with Pilgrimage of Grace. In 1692, there was a plan to set up a meeting house. The corporation declared their dislike and detestation of it, saying that they would oppose it by lawful means and stand by the magistrates in what they advise in the matter. It's not known what the magistrates advised, but we do know that dissent could not be curbed by the corporation, and that most of the great religious sects are established in Doncaster and have been for many years. We come to 1700. In 1700, Doncaster suffered an outbreak of typhoid. It's been a real killing fields and death fields, this place, hasn't it? One thing and another. The first Presbyterians met in the house of the Reverend John Compton, M.A. They have a fine church in Waterdale. I don't know whether that still exists.
The building that's this is now a nightclub.
All right.
It's a tough water there.
The Unitarians came in 1744. The Wesleyans, Methodists, Roman Catholics, and Quakers have been at Doncaster since 1799. A Congregationalist church was built at Aldgate in 1804. The United Congregationalists joined and are called the Free Christian Church in Aldgate. Does that still exist?
Is it that one behind Aldgate?
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, right. The oldest houses in Doncaster are the almshouses of St. Thomas's Hospital, I don't know where they are.
Back at the inside of the old museum.
Oh, right. In the 18th century, Doncaster had great revenues. It still possesses rich estates at Sandal, Wheatley and Bowlby and elsewhere. But in the early 19th century, the corporation sold off Rossington Town Council at a town when they thought more of the pleasures of this life than what the estate passed for. This was a failure to its citizens of the time. So they must have been a bit wanting to enjoy life a bit more and spend a bit. The mansion house was built between 1744 and 1750, at a time when there was only two other mansion houses in England, one in York and one in London. I think that's still the case as well, isn't it?
Is that still?
In 1748, a Roman urn was found near Old Cross. Stateby mentions that a Roman emperor's body was found where afterwards rose the cross of Otto de Tilly. So, can't see it being anything to do with that, because that were in commemoration of Otto de Tilly, isn't it?
Mm.
Mill Cross was at the north entrance to the town. It was engraved in the history of St. George's Church, but it was destroyed in 1765 and was described as having a square shaft with rolls at angles developed into a canopy with four faces, which had held four statues. A central shaft running through the canopy and moulded to match the richness of its croqueting and probably carried an ornamental cross dated about 1250 AD. So that's a bit time at Normans as well, won't it? Doncaster gained its first theatre in 1766, which was also the year when the first St. Leger was held and made Doncaster famous for horse racing. Doncaster also became a coaching town where many stagecoaches passed through, and in 1782 there were over 30 inns. Oliver Cromwell stayed at the Angel Inn in 1761, as did the Duke of York in 1827. The Duke of Wellington and Queen Victoria also stayed there. In 1792, a dispensary opened where the poor could obtain free medicines. And in 1827, the corporation decided to light the streets with gas. By 1831, Doncaster had a population of 10,000 people. Like all towns in those days, it was dirty and unsanitary, and many of the inhabitants lived in squalid conditions. However, things improved later on in the century when sewers were built and a piped water supply was created. In 1845, the ruins of St. Mary Magdalene, which were of Norman origin and probably built on the remains of a Saxon precursor, were covered and the old Guildhall and Grammar School knocked down to make way for a new marketplace. A new Guildhall was built in 1847, and in 1849 the market was built. Also in 1849 the railway reached Doncaster. Railways meant the end of stagecoaches and brought a new prosperity to the town. Is Guildhall and marketplace still existing from that time, or have they been altered?
Guildhall got pulled down in the 60s,
mm.
And they built Marks and Spencer's there.
Yeah.
All right.
Of the differentiate centre.
Yeah. What about Market? Is that still same Market?
Drona's changed his vote pattern from that year, yeah. There was actually a plaque inside on the date. There was actually a plaque on the wall inside with a date on, but I can't remember that date on it.
An infirmary opened in 1853 and the Great Northern Railway moved its engine building works to Doncaster. The engine works became the major employer in the town. In 1858, St George's was rebuilt. The church was designed by the architect Sir George Gilbert Scott, and part of the medieval crypt of St George's includes a grave slab with a ship incised in the vaulting. That's an unusual thing, isn't it? I wonder if, I mean, they may have sailed a small vessels, do you think, up Don or something like that at one time.
Well,
I mean, that were a sink port, weren't it?
Mm.
Yeah, so, or it might have links with that, I don't know. It is also part of the old Roman fort wall at Church Street. Doncaster at one time possessed a castle. The castle stood in the northeast corner of the Roman fort under the east end of the present parish church. So there's been a castle there as well at one time. Did you know that?
Mm.
No? Mm. The line of the inner bailey was closely followed by the medieval churchyard. So should be still signs of that somewhere. Whether it's just in shape at land or whatever. In 1863, traitors' heads were ordered to be set up at Old Cross and Water Mills. And in 1872, at Bridge Terrace, there was a union workhouse and a horse fair was held at a marketplace at the end of Wood Street and Cartwright Street. Possibly near the library car park. The Corn Exchange was built in 1873. So that's still the same Corn Exchange. In the late 19th and 20th centuries, industry in Doncaster was dominated by engineering. In 1869, the first public library was opened, and in 1899, Doncaster gained electric light. In 1902, electric trams ran in the streets of Doncaster and the museum and art gallery opened in 1909. In 1914, the borough of Doncaster was extended to include Exthorpe, Wheatley and Balby. Enfield Park was opened in 1923, and in 1928-31 the trams were made way for the trolleybuses. Doncaster escaped relatively lightly during the Second World War, although there was a serious attack when two parachute bombs fell on the town. In 1951 the population of Doncaster stood at 83,000. And in 1961-63, it was the turn of the trolleybuses to be phased out. So, presumably, petrol engine had come into Doncaster became known for its butterscotch in the 20th century. And in the 1970s, two new shopping centres were built. The French Gate Centre, originally known as the Arndale Centre, and the Waterdale Centre. Today, the population of Doncaster Metropolitan Borough is 286,000. So it's been multiplied. I've got a few other bits of history that I picked up. Priory Place was the site of the Carmelites or White Friars. And there's a Patrick Stirling Monument, which was erected in 1980 as a gift by the Great Northern Railway staff to mark the 70th birthday of the great railway pioneer. It was a drinking fountain to be used by the public of Doncaster. Mr. Stirling was the GNR's chief locomotive engineer at Doncaster. He designed the locomotive works at the plant and the plant along with some 700 locomotives. They turned quite a few out, didn't they? 700. And there used to be a 20-foot obelisk at the junction of York Road and Bentley Road, which was erected to mark a road improvement approximately 125 years ago. It was moved to make way for the traffic island at the northern end of New Mill Bridge over the River Don. And in 1970, a piece of pottery dating from Saxon Anglian, second half of the 6th century, was found in Churchway. They also list some notable places. I don't know what's notable about them, but I'll read them out anyway. Gasworks, railway station, plant works, schools on St. Sepulchre Gate, St. James Church, Chequer House, Christ Church, St. Anne's Square, Hamilton Lodge, Corn Mill at Marsh Gate, schools and church on Catherine Street, chapel on Oxford Place, cemetery on Cemetery Road, St. George's Church, Marketplace, Regent Square, Netherall, Core House, Grange, Grammar School on Palm Road, and theatre on Marketplace. I wonder if that's a regional theatre that home. Don't think so. Going back a bit. It is an old building, isn't it? So, I mean, the only other thing I can think about, like, is Ivy was on about some, like, sand tunnels or something near the cemetery. Does anybody. Eh?
Used to be a sand house.
Sand house?
Yeah. What's that mean?
Half built out of sand on
them,
yeah.
Oh, were they?
Years ago.
Did people live in it? All right. So it weren't nothing sinister then?
No.
All right.
I think they have the tunnels
or? I don't know.
Well, they probably went underneath. House. Well, sand, I mean, how do you build a house out of sand?
Well, it's sandstone, isn't it?
Oh, is it sandstone?
Oh,
all right.
All right, I was saying that.
Oh, sandstone, you said. Yogging Fernley were pulled down 2 years ago when I built the new Dow office. Just the education department building for them there. And it was pulled down, 2 years ago?
So, that's as much history as I can find out about a place.
Yeah, I think you're doing well.
I mean, Ken gave me a bit of industrial stuff, didn't you?
Yeah.
That railway and whatnot. But Margaret and myself researched somebody a few years ago, didn't we? And just got shoved it back and done. Yeah, but I mean, this has been a predominant thing that so much fighting and killing has gone on at this place, hasn't it? Mm. the various armies must have been a central like meeting point, and even when Doncaster weren't really involved in it, it were always involved because people were using it as a base or whatever. So I mean, we brought that up last week, didn't we, that it had been used a lot for a lot of deaths here and what have you, one sort or another. We prayed about that, and we prayed about also pagan influence, didn't we? And what else? We prayed about this Mother Goddess thing, didn't we? Did we? No. That they found Simpson. Yeah. Yeah, I think we prayed. Did we pray about that? No, didn't we pray about it? Well, we pray this Mother Goddess anyway. We've got that.
What you said, Ken, you said there was a church where the corn exchanges were. That had explained the bodies they found under the corn exchanges. That was a cemetery, remember?
Yeah. Well, that were Mary Magdalene's church, weren't it? Yeah. I think it were a Norman church, that. Mm-hmm. And as I said, in history, it appears that they were... It was a Saxon church precursor, then that may have been the one that King Edwin built. Mm. Because it mentions that he built a church at Doncaster, doesn't it? Mm. And going back to that amount of time, you'd think it's got to be his period, that.
Yeah, but another thing, as you were going through it, I thought, there were a lot of time when kings were here, weren't there? There were a lot of important decisions made and that. Yeah. And were it Cromwell that were here? And
well, he stayed at Angel Inn.
He stayed there. I mean, that again were an important point in history, weren't it?
Yeah, it's a north to south route, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But it's the line of the territory, it's flat.